I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. In the mid-1970s, Steve Tibbetts began a musical career that has taken him across the globe. What started out as an adolescent desire to play rock guitar grew into a passion to become a serious composer. He often seeks inspiration from his travels. Beta's Steve Gotcher talked with Tibbetts about his four-decade musical journey and the story behind his album, Life Of.
When you're working on music, you have a lot of files, and you have to name them. There comes a breaking point where you can't just name them gong thing, guitar thing, droney thing, echo thing. So I've sort of run out of cryptic, odd titles using Sanskrit, you know, names of charnel grounds and oddities. So I just named them after people I knew. My kids, my friends, people that had died or for no reason in particular. And this was just file keeping to begin with. But the files sort of took on their own life. And this happens when you work alone too much. Your art starts to talk to you. You know, it's like your blender singing to you or something
sure.
like that. So some of the compositions seem to need to reflect the personality of the person.
Now, the title of the record is Life Of, and each of the titles, 10 of the titles, say Life Of and someone's name, Life of Joel, Life of Carol, Life of Emily, and so on. And then there's three other works called Bloodwork, Start Again, and End Again. So tell me, why? Why did you do it that way?
Bloodwork was because I did a lot of bloodwork. I gave my sister a transplant at MD Anderson Medical Center for a clinical trial for her ovarian cancer, which the clinical trial succeeded. She lived. But we were constantly doing blood work. I have 200 pages of blood work for this transplant. So it just became an interesting motif. What are we doing here? And the names of these tunes, too, they're like blood work, too. There's my son, my daughters, and there my wife, names of my grandmother. So it's all blood work after a fashion. But that seemed like the right way to lead something like this off.
What did you want to get out of this record?
I wanted to be like some of the music that I heard where I thought, I want to be like this music. I want to make music like this. I'm going to try. Instead of creating a giant castle of sound, a huge shrine to myself, can I do it with just guitar and something else?
So what influenced you to stick with the guitar? Why did you do that?
1966, 67? That was the thing. What, you know, if you're a 14-year-old boy, you think, what can I do to get some attention or something? And my God, in those days, the Beatles, Cream, local bands like Oz, Mendelbaum.
So let's go back to your debut album, 1976 is when it came out. You recorded it, I assume, a couple years before that?
No, I recorded it my senior year at McAllister College. I had finished up my art major and was going to be an art teacher, and they put in a small recording studio in a closet that they had used to store kilts. So they moved the kilts out, so it sort of had a woolen, sweaty smell to it for the first 6 or 8 months. And they put in a small four-track recorder there, and that's where I spent every second.
So that album just bursts with energy and ideas. It seemed like you had a lot to get off your chest. What was your process for doing that? Because it seems fairly complex.
No, it was really random. What's in the studio? In the studio at that time was an EML 101 synthesizer. I had nights, a lot of time, just screwing around. There was no process other than complete random falling off a cliff. over and over again. Finally, you end up with 38, 40 minutes of music and think, well, why not? I'm an art major, so I had plenty of material for a cover. Let's see if I can put something together.
One of the things I like most about music is variety. I really like being surprised when styles are blended and genres are bent. Is that something that you look forward to, spaciousness? Is that what you're trying to create?
I'll take inspiration anywhere I can get it. If I could just create music from my mind, sit down with staff paper and a pencil, I would do it. But I need to hear music in Indonesia, in Bali. I need to hear those gong cycles and live in them. I need to live next to the longhorns and from Tibetan monasteries in Nepal. Working overseas helped me a lot, helped me live in that kind of music.
Did you decide on a course at some point, or are you basically just going wherever the next thing leads you?
Yeah. Just drifting.
But yet, there seems to be a kind of a cohesiveness of that path.
I know what I want the music to do. I just don't know how to find the sounds. So it's a lot of, it's very, very labor intensive. I have to spend a lot of time to get even close to what I think is going to float my boat, frost your cake, however you want to put it.
Right.
I know what it's got to be like, but the intention is not as clear as you might think.
In 1982, you got the attention of Manfred Eicher, and he's from ECM Records. And he worked with you on the recording process of Northern Song, and his style is to do it quick. How did that work out for you?
I didn't think it worked out at all. I was upset about the record, and I thought, well, that's it. We failed. Game over. He loved it.
Oh, he
loved the record.
Yeah.
It was just re-released as an ECM Touchstone, one record they consider a sort of root exposition of the label's ethos or aesthetic.
So in 1987, your fifth album came out, Exploded View, and Glenn Swan of AllMusic said, his electric guitar howls defiantly without a lot of power chords or convention, and his musicianship is top-notch, perhaps an Adrian Belew without the pop, plus a nod toward world music in production value. What do you think of that?
He's getting pretty close. Everything electric guitar that I do is always going to trace back to Hendrix's Band of Gypsies album, especially his solo on Machine Gun. That to me is the top expression of electric guitar. So, sure, Adrian Belew, but all Hendrix, all the time, I think.
On Exploded View, you worked with Claudia Schmidt, which I thought at first was a strange combination. Was she involved in the decision-making process of how that went?
She was involved in the screaming process.
Yes.
She was incredible. I thought, what are we doing here? But it was a friend of mine, Susie Katz. I mentioned to her that I wanted to work with a singer, and she said, then you got to get Claudia. And I said, oh, I don't know Claudia. She said, all right. So Susie sent me a cassette tape that she'd recorded of Claudia warming up in her dressing room at a concert for the Boulder Theater. And I listened to it. I thought, all right. Same thing with Mark. If this is what she does in her dressing room, yeah, if she can shriek like this, it's going to work with electric guitar.
Right.
With this shrieking thing that seems to be going on in my world in 1987. And sure enough, she came in. I remember set up a mic and I stood in front of her, and I was kind of moving my hands around, feeling like I was conducting. And we stopped, and Mark and I looked at each other like, this is going to work. And I said to Claudia, she said, was that okay? And I said, yeah, it was cool how you were following my hands conducting. And she said, oh, I had my eyes closed. So 3 days and she was out. It was great.
Speaking of collaborations, in 1997, you recorded the album Cho, and that's with Tibetan Buddhist nun Choying Drolma. Now, this record, it seems like you decided to move out of the center with your guitar and basically let her voice and that kind of music take over.
This was a very touchy situation in some ways. I heard Choying singing, and I thought, I really, really want to do something with this. So, first of all, I went and asked the abbot of the monastery, is this okay? I'd been working in Nepal for years, so I knew him, Choking him, and he said, yeah, sure, it's okay. He said, you're gonna get some pushback on this, but, you know, take a run at it. So I got the lineage permission, so to speak. My job on this was to frame Choying's voice and not screw it up, basically. Again, I was approaching it with a sense of fear. Can I do this, stay out of the way, underpin what she's doing, and bring some backing, some muscle into this? The singing is fine the way it is, but can I create a container for it? Or can we collaborate? Can we goof around with this, have fun, and still make it not ridiculous? After this record came out, this record did very well. It really is a classic in a way, what Mark and I and Choying did. I'm quite proud of it. I got every Tibetan Buddhist nun collaboration in the world, and they were all frightening. They had chill out beats behind them. They had flute. None of them seemed to work. So we threaded a needle on this. We got lucky, too. And again, this was a collaboration. Mark saying, this works, but this doesn't. So having another set of ears was really important.
Well, when you say adding some muscle to the music, I feel like that's exactly what you did to it.
Yeah, low end, drums. But it's muscular music already.
Right.
When you hear these Anis, these nuns, this tremendous power in their singing, it's hard to get, hard to understand unless you're there in the gompa, in the monastery. You hear the sound of them singing. It's echoing off the walls. You're looking out, and there are mountains. There are frescoes, these tonkas on the wall, wrathful deities. There's incense. There's the longhorns and the drums. It's tremendously powerful. If you just listen to a stereo recording, it may not work so well for you. So we're recreating the movie a little bit.
What kind of things do you have coming up in the future musically?
Well, I just finished nursing school, so I got that. That won't be musical, but I'll be working as a nurse. Musically, I'm about a quarter of the way through a record that will be, I think, somewhat loud.
What made you decide to go to nursing school?
Seeing the inner world of medicine at the MD Anderson Cancer Center, seeing my mother die, as she was dying, hearing acronyms like LPN, CNA, BSN, wondering what they were. And then my job working with the study abroad groups in Nepal was, as my card said, director of health and well-being, which mostly meant director of lower intestinal activity, right? Making sure that people were didn't have amoebic dysentery, giardia, or bacterial dysentery. So I've done this to some extent in other capacities, so I thought I would at least be a good CNA so I could help take care of my mother. I did that, and then somebody said, well, you should continue this. So it's more random than you would think. Just like music, you lurch from one thing to the other. But I went to an introductory program at St. Paul College, and from there I signed up for a couple of courses. And you know how it goes. I've always needed to have something on the side, and nursing is something you can do part-time and work on music.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Tippett spoke with Beta's Steve Gotcher about his album Life Of. Find out more about Steve Tippett and his music at wpr.org/beta. That does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Aaron Lee Carr, Mark Prooksch, and Steve Tibbetts. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via iTunes or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions. Special thanks to producer Carl Christensen.
Carl did a really great job.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Hey, Steve, what are you doing?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Adam, you're gonna miss it. Adam!
And thanks to you, our alphas. Until next week, I'm Doug Gordon.
Doug is back and he's ready to go.